If you're a regular KVPR listener, you're probably familiar with the idea that where you live can influence your health. But just 10 years ago, that field of research was still emerging. One of the first journalists to tackle that issue in depth was Suzanne Bohan, at that time a reporter with the Bay Area News Group. Her four-part series on the subject earned her an award from the White House Correspondents Association in 2010. Last month, she published her second book, entitled 20 Years of Life: Why the Poor Die Earlier and How to Challenge Inequity. FM 89's Carrie Klein interviewed Bohan about the book and how it builds off her newspaper career.
I had been reporting for years on lack of access to health care, how new clinics improved health, and how getting health insurance to people is the key. But this was a whole new way of looking at health, and it made so much sense because about 15% of the disparities in lifespan and disease in the nation is attributed to lack of health care, actually. It's a surprising statistic, but it really is borne out. But that much of it comes from creating healthy conditions. And an example is, for example, how we created clean water systems in the early 19th century and had other public sanitation campaigns, and that profoundly improved life expectancy. That wasn't about what a doctor could give you. And this is expanding that philosophy into creating healthy communities with parks that people can use and feel safe doing so, walking paths, better grocery stores, better schools, and so on.
And so the book is called 20 Years of Life. Tell me about where that title comes from and what it means for our health, putting all of these different factors together.
It points to the 20-year lifespan difference that commonly exists between nearby neighborhoods, and it's based on usually it's wealth, inevitably, although it's not simply income. There's other factors. But more importantly, in the title, it describes a roadmap for how to challenge this kind of inequity in lifespan and disease rates by building up political power and in creating cohesion among community organizations who are working on similar problems. And it's very important for me in reporting that where possible, I want to describe what's going on to fix an issue rather than simply focusing on the issue. I don't think that's very helpful for people. We all know there's a lot of problems. What really is important is what's being done constructively to address it. And in fact, this book is very much a blueprint for any community wanting to change conditions.
And explain a little bit more how these conditions actually play into health. I mean, as you say, health can really vary dramatically by zip code. It can vary by as much as 20 years when you're looking at life expectancy. You say it relates back to chronic stress and social determinants. Before we kind of get into challenging these issues, just where does health research stand when it comes to understanding the causes of these disparities?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And they've done, studies showing that lack of access to a park, naturally that youth who do not have access to a park simply are not involved in sports as much. And that's, of course, very health promoting. And in fact, one study showed that 50% of all the really healthy activity of heart, the high cardiovascular activities entail using a park. And if a community does not have that, then they're missing out on that benefit. And also, the diets, you study the diets of people in these communities, and they simply don't have access to grocery stores and so on. And the studies also show that naturally, when you have access to a grocery store, you are going to make better choices. And when there are fewer fast food outlets around or liquor stores and more options for healthy food, you're going to make the right choice. So it's really quite unfair to say these people are making bad choices when they simply don't have the same menu of options that wealthier communities have. And there's also policies that mitigate against these communities that allow, say, heavy industry to exist in their midst or diesel trucks to drive through their communities, leaving particulates, whereas, as I cite in the original newspaper series, there's one community in the East Bay that banned diesel trucks, is an affluent community, and their roadways. But that meant that more were going through poor communities. So they're fighting against those kinds of policies as well that make their communities less healthy.
So as you said, you know, this book really isn't so much about the problem, which is these health disparities and the social determinants that play into them. But it's really about this vast California experiment started in 2010. It's called Building Healthy Communities, which many people are probably familiar with. And it's a project of the California Endowment. How did it come about? How was it started in 2010?
It really ultimately started with a vision of the CEO of the California Endowment, Dr. Robert Ross. He's a pediatrician. And in 1984, fresh out of medical school, he started working at a clinic in Camden, New Jersey, and I profile this in the book. And it was right at the height of the crack epidemic, or when it was emerging, I should say. And he was just devastated by these premature births he was attending to with, you know, two-pound babies. And he realized he couldn't fix. His medical training had not equipped him to deal with this onslaught of illness that he was seeing inside this Camden clinic, and that he was patching people up and sending them back into sick communities, the ones that created these conditions. And so he switched his focus to healing communities, as he said, rather than simply healing patients. And he became a public health director. He went back and got a master's in public administration and took over health departments in Philadelphia and San Diego, and then joined the California Endowment as its CEO. And the board of directors of the endowment agreed with his vision, and they fully supported it. And they really gambled on this when they started in 2010, because they were giving all of their grant giving, which is about $200 million a year. And they just decided to gamble on this project of concentrating on building political power and cohesion among nonprofits and passing laws and policies to fix conditions. And they, as they said, they don't spend a nickel on the provision of health care. They concentrate on changing conditions in the community.
And so what does building healthy communities actually look like on the ground? You know, how many communities is it involved with? What sort of groups? And how are they doing this grassroots work?
That's a great question and a very important question, because the logistics of it is all important. It's 14 communities. It ranges from South LA and City Heights in San Diego, Oakland, Richmond, Kern, Merced, Fresno, and up to Del Norte County in the far north. And what makes it work is there's the presence of some paid staffers, some from the endowment who already lived in the community. So they were well known to the community, and that was critical. You can't have outsiders coming in and trying to start up this campaign. You have to have people who are known and trusted in the community. And then they take some of the community leaders and they create what's called a hub, and that's a staffed position also. And then they provide all manner of resources in terms of research and polling data and holding convenings and meetings. With these community organizing meetings, a really critical factor of what makes them work to have people come out after a long day of work to speak at a city council meeting or plan a campaign is they provide a dinner, you know, a buffet dinner there, and they provide childcare. So people don't have to stress that part of the equation, which is a major factor for a busy person working. The beauty of it also is when people start to work together and collectively start to make a difference, they feel like this new sense of power in their own life. I've seen it time and time again, from youth to adult. They just are amazed that they have these successes against powerful, you know, entities. The city council passed a law that they envisioned and they actually got it done. And it, you know, changes their life and their sense of possibilities. And it also creates much more neighborhood cohesion. So people are getting to know each other. And that's also a powerful form of health promotion.
This Building Healthy Communities program, of course, is not just responsible for making people feel more cohesive and increasing a community feeling. I mean, it's actually having very real impacts within these communities, right? And within, you know, within the legislative environment here in California.
Yes, it is. And I think to give some concrete examples would be helpful. And one of the most impactful, there's so many. In Fresno, there's been some very powerful changes. And one was a campaign that started by Sarah Reyes out of the Fresno California Endowment office. She's known to many people there as a former assembly member, and she joined the California Endowment, you know, years back. And she was the one who pressed Bob Ross, when the CEO of the endowment, to include on the agenda with a board meeting that was going to be held in Fresno, youth speaking about unfair school disciplines that were pushing them out of school. They were saying there's not a dropout problem, there's a push-out problem, and it made the kids, you know, fearful for their future. And Sarah managed to get that on the agenda, and they were very reluctant initially to have young people speaking to the trustees of a, you know, multi-billion dollar foundation. They were given a strict 30-minute limit, but they were so taken with them, the trustees, that they kept them there for an hour, posed with photos with them afterward, exchanged business cards, and that was the genesis for a statewide campaign that reformed school discipline practices in California that's directly linked to this Building Healthy Communities initiative. And there are now 11 new laws passed in California, with another one pending, to reduce suspensions and expulsions in California. And again, it all originated out of that original Fresno vision. And it's resulted in 330,000 fewer suspensions last year compared with, I think, 5 or 6 years earlier. So that's one concrete example. And it's working so well that they're actually going to continue it. It was going to sunset in 2020, and a lot of these community organizations that are supported by it were going to have to seek other funding elsewhere, and they were all planning on that. But the word is out that the board of the directors of the California Endowment is saying, this is working so well, why would we stop it? It's making a profound and lasting change, and it's not just in the 14 communities, but it's actually statewide.
And as you said, these are just some of the of over 500 new policies and laws that have arisen out of building healthy communities.
Correct. And I can give a brief one in Fresno. I mean, I could spend an hour just describing all the various successes. But there was one in Fresno. People came out, you know, 300 people showed up to a city council meeting in 2012. And that started what began a major campaign to improve quality of parks and the number of parks in the south and west side of Fresno, which had about 1 acre of parkland per certain number of population versus almost 5 in the northern part of Fresno. So there was a severe lack of park access in the south and west, and they were also dangerous fields. People, kids would talk about spraining their ankles running on the soccer fields and so on. And it's been incredible. They've gotten, you know, huge resources into a new parks master plan that's examining the south and west and opening up new options and quality of the fields there. And they've also had an agreement with the school district that opened up almost 400 acres of parkland on the weekend to residents. And that's just the beginning of the work there in Fresno.
Well, and so this book really covers so much ground. You know, it covers these health disparities, social determinants of health. And then, of course, it really chronicles this huge Building Healthy Community program and all this Cal Endowment funding through California. You know, what do you want your readers to walk away with having read this book?
I want them to walk away with the concept that there are, in so-called bad neighborhoods, they are filled with really good people who want a better life like everybody else in this country. And it's a message for philanthropy as well, to fund change, not charity. Charity is, you know, the funding dries up and the conditions are ultimately the same and people are disillusioned that another program came and went. But this is about funding change by bringing in these distressed communities into the mainstream political process and giving them a seat at the table. And so their concerns and their voices are heard along with everybody else.
Great. Well, Suzanne Bohan, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Carrie.
Suzanne Bohan is a health and science journalist in the Bay Area. Her book, 20 Years of Life, Why the Poor Die Earlier and How to Challenge Inequity, was published last month. And in the interests of disclosure, the California Endowment is also a funder of Valley Public Radio.